Hi, and welcome to the 43rd episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm John Neff.
And I'm Damon Lavrence.
And I am back from the 2006 Paris Motor Show, which happened late last week. And it was an adventurous trip, to say the least. I was accompanied by our own Eric Bryant and Alberto Ballestin from Autoblog Spanish. And we pretty much formed the Autoblog team in Paris, and the rest of the team stayed home and kind of fielded our info as we sent it out. So we're going to be talking a lot about the Paris show today, and I think Damon's going to play 20 questions with me and see what he can get about the show. But before we begin, I'm going to let Volvo, the sponsors of our podcast, say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, so we're back, and Damon, I'll just let you shoot away. Ask me anything you want.
I think the major thing, did you kind of see kind of a prevailing concept or a prevailing theme throughout the show? Was there anything that kind of stuck out that you saw throughout the show and all the different automakers or many of the automakers that kind of, like I said, stuck out, seemed like a theme?
Well, it's really hard to say coming from the North American market, you know, because
right.
I could say, you know, small cars were a trend because that's fast becoming a trend over here. But I mean, that's
right. But that's been
the
trend there for 20 years. Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you, I was really impressed by, Peugeot, Renault, and, what's the third one? Citroën.
Really?
You know, considering it was, you know, I guess could be considered kind of their hometown show, so
right.
to speak. I thought they had the best displays, the best concepts, and the most exciting new product. Peugeot especially.
What in particular?
Well, the 908 RC, that huge Darth Vader sedan.
Oh yeah,
was incredible in person. I mean, it was so imposing. And it really was, you know, I thought of the Maybach Accelero.
Designed for tire testing, yeah.
Exactly. I thought of that, but even more so. I mean, this one almost seemed like it could just roll right into a production line, but yet it was so big. It was just monstrous. They also had the 908 Le Mans racer. Which was really exciting because I've really gotten into the LMP1 class of the American Le Mans
right,
series.
You mentioned that, yeah.
And Le Mans racing. And just to know that there's going to be a car that can take on the Audi R10, which, you know, to this point has been completely dominant, not only because it's such a good machine, but even when that series has kind of hindered the R10 by giving advantages to its competitors, like allowing them to race with less weight, the drivers of the R10 just shine through and just continue to destroy the competition. So it'll be really, really great next year to see the Peugeot line up with the Audi at the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
The 908 RC concept, now, that was a V12 turbo diesel that was put into that, right?
I believe so. I'd have to...
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to pull up to verify. But...
It's got the weirdest A-pillar, by the way. I remember looking at that, and it kind of rakes straight up and then kind of pulls across the roof line, if I recall. The photos were just really odd when I first saw it.
Yeah, one thing I noticed about Peugeot's kind of concepts and where they're going is that they have this kind of nose to them. I mean, you look at the nose on the 908 Le Mans racer, and that's obviously there for functional reasons.
Right.
But the 908 RC sedan had that same kind of... almost like pointy nose of an actual race car. And I remember reading a couple articles in some of the major auto mags. I think it was Automobile, one of Robert Comerford's articles. You know, he writes about the design of vehicles. And he was saying that, you know, to get away from this jelly bean shape, what's the next big design going to be? You know, where's it going to come from? And he said, you know, they have to start taking these designs from race cars. And that's immediately what I thought of, is that to see that type of really pronounced fenders going to, you know, just like shrink wrapped over the wheels, and then a kind of a jutting nose. That's what I kind of thought of. You know, it's not so pronounced on this 908 RC, but there's definitely this kind of pointed nose. And yeah, you're right. The A pillar kind of juts in and then curves back out. I really like the rear fenders on it on the 908 RC. They're these kind of blistered, kind of almost balloon like around the rear wheels, and the rear wheels are very far out in the corners.
Yeah, definitely. No, you provided us a couple shots that were really, really detailed on the rear fenders, and yeah, the entire back end of the car is, I mean, the entire vehicle itself is an interesting design, has some interesting design elements, but the back end I thought was really, really interesting with the C-pillar kind of stretching across, and all in all, I think it was a really, really pretty car. The trunk there has got to be huge, though. It looks like you could put a truck bed back there in your set.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, the rear wheels are like a foot and a half behind the rear doors, and then there's another 2 feet of rear overhang past the rear wheel. So yeah, definitely. It almost seems like it was designed for U.S. taste than European.
Were they allowing any of you journalists to get into the car and actually check out the interior?
No. That one was definitely off limits to all of us. Oh man, I have to say, journalists in Paris, and you know, they don't all come from France, but rudest group of people I've ever met. I mean,
really?
I was getting, you're basically like in a mosh pit sometimes, and people are just bumping you. And the problem was, on the second day, you know, all the video crews come in to videotape for TV shows and whatnot. So they'll be shooting, and you know, there's thousands of people in the exposition center. So I'll be trying to walk around a car to get like a shot of the interior, and then this random guy out of nowhere will throw his hand out and block me and say, you know, in some, you know, French tongue I don't understand, that they're, you know, shooting a segment and I can't go, you know. And first of all, you don't own the floor. I'll go wherever the hell I want.
Exactly.
And one guy actually, like, threw his arm out and he hit my – I had a video camera and my camera, and he, like, knocked them into each other. And, oh, my God, I pushed him back so hard. I was like, don't – you know, you can push a man, but don't push a man's equipment. That's just not cool.
That's
– So it was that was one of the hard things we had to deal with. And then the other hard thing was the Wi-Fi, the internet, which, you know, was our lifeblood at the show, was just horrible. I mean – I have to say, and I think other auto bloggers who were there would back me up. You know, this was not a media friendly show at all. I mean, they really made our jobs as difficult as possible.
Oh, especially for the likes of us, where, like you said, Wi-Fi and internet connection is definitely the required thing. I mean, if you're just sending it back and it's going to be printed in a magazine 2 months from now, it's a different issue.
Right.
But you know, with us, it's all about immediacy. It's what we excel at. So. All in all, Hyundai, I can't pronounce it, Arniges?
Arniges, yeah.
Arniges, close enough, whatever. As pretty in person as we see in the photos, what was your overall view on that?
Yeah, I'd say it was pleasant. I mean, you know,
it's not a revolutionary design. Yeah, don't get me wrong, but I thought it had some, once again, some pretty interesting design elements that I hope to see carry over to some more of Hyundai products in the future.
Well, and that's what I think, you know, Hyundai's success has been built on, is kind of graduating from these oddball designs that you know, people accept, to designs that are just that, they're pleasant. People, can more than live with them. They're attractive, but you know, they don't break the mold. They don't risk, they don't polarize, which is a strategy in its own. I mean, you know, Dodge has made a lot of money off, Chrysler and Dodge have made a lot of money off of being as polar as possible with their designs. And I think Hyundai is trying the opposite route that maybe Toyota went down for a long time, which is, you know, cut it right down the middle, make it attractive to as many people as possible.
No, that's they need to shore up that market segment, no doubt about that. So, one of the other brands that I thought was kind of interesting was Skoda, which they're out of where? I should probably know this, but they're
I don't know exactly why.
They're from the Czech Republic. That's right.
Yeah, besides the fact they're owned by the Volkswagen Audi group, that's about as much as I know. You know, the best thing we saw at the Skoda booth was on the very beginning of the second day. Eric and I were just walking into this hall that Skoda was in, and we see these two people carrying a Skoda Roomster, it was this woman and this man, I think, and they were just carrying. I was like, what the hell is that? And they set it down very gently.
Yeah.
And we look at it, and it seriously looks as detailed as an actual car. And then I ask if we could take a picture, and they're like, no, there's going to be a show. So like 10 minutes later, this thing is floating around the Skoda display, and it's a balloon. It's like a blimp. And it's got these two kind of like fans, rotor blades on gimbals that they control with this giant RC controller, and it's flying around the Skoda display. It was the coolest thing. It was the one Eric did a post on it. It was by far cooler than their concept than any production car they had. It was it had my
well, yeah, I'm it drew the required people over there, I'm sure, more than anything else. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. They had the Joyster concept, which is pretty good. I mean, I'll tell you what, I in a lot of ways, I was really disappointed with the Paris show because it seems increasingly that every manufacturer just literally shows their hand before the show. I mean, weeks before the show or a week before the show, they, you know, release images of what they're going to unveil. And I mean, how long ago did the VW IROC concept?
I was just about to bring that up. Yeah, definitely.
And literally, I think there were two or three actual surprises at the show. The Ford Iosys X concept, which was an Iosys-inspired small SUV, was one of them that was an actual surprise. But aside from that, I mean, the really big ones were old news. I mean, we almost wondered what we were doing there because, I mean,
we'd already covered it. It's just a matter of seeing it in person and getting a press release, and that's it. We could have done that from here,
right? And getting live, and truthfully, we could have. And I don't know. I hope that's not a trend of automakers. I hope, you know, for the Detroit show, which would be the biggest, that they really keep some stuff under their hat. Mm-hmm. I mean, we fought tooth and nail to get pictures of the Alfa Romeo 8C Competizione.
Yes.
And, I mean, really, it's been around like a year. We've all seen it. I mean, this is the kind of the production version, but they had it encased in a glass cube. And literally, they were only letting people in based on the size of the camera you had in your hand.
You're kidding.
I'm not. Eric tried to get in, and he's got, you know, something better than a point-and-shoot camera, but not a digital SLR. And he's like, they won't let me in. And I walk up, and I've got a Canon Rebel XT with a big lens and big flash and all that. Mm-hmm. And I lifted my camera up to the bouncer's face, and he let me right in. And the only other people they were letting some people with point-and-shoots in, but they looked to be important, like they were execs of some sort and, you know, just taking pictures. But then you get in this cube, and it's a glass cube with spotlights in it. And I don't know, you know.
Oh, that's just bad photo. That's just a bad idea for photos right there.
You couldn't create a more unflattering display to have a vehicle shot in. And I did the best I could, but, you know.
No, actually, a lot of the shots turned out really, really well. I was pretty impressed with most of them. Is it as sexy in person as it is in photos?
It is, but considering the price is going to be in the, you know, plus six-figure range, you know, like over $100,000, I don't know. I didn't see a $100,000 car sitting there. I saw like I saw like a 60 to 80 maybe, not like a 110 to 120. I guess I just wish Alfa Romeo wasn't spearheading its return to the U.S. with a car that's out of reach of so many. I mean, the Alfa Brera Coupe and Cabriolet will make their way over and probably be in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, which I think is still pretty expensive. I mean, that's an awesome, awesome car, but it seems, you know, like Audi A3 size. I think it should start below $30,000 if they can make that happen. But I don't know. I think they're going to ride on their name and they're going to ride on just the splash of them returning.
I was going to say the cachet has got to be worth a lot, but no, you're absolutely right. I'd like to see it under $30,000. And unfortunately, it just doesn't look like it's going to come of that, which is really, really disappointing.
No, I mean, the 8C, I mean, it did look incredible. I called it metallic sex, and that's exactly what it is. It is a drop-dead gorgeous car. It'll be nice to see it over here, although I doubt I'll see it in person when it, you know, very soon after it arrives. But another car that was there, the Audi R8, which basically was the dead horse that was beaten, you know, into an inch of...
Shot and stabbed
shot
as well,
stabbed,
yeah.
Quartered, everything. It, you know, covered every which way. I'll tell you, in person, it was a very good-looking car. I'll point everyone who's interested in the technical side of it to Eric Bryant's post on the cutaway. He took a lot of great shots. They had basically, you know, carved one down the middle so you could see all the hardware, and he goes through it. I thought it was really odd that they went with a 4.8 liter, which in my head is kind of a smallish engine for a car that's also going to be over 100,000.
Right.
But then I was reading my Road and Track, I believe, and they said in a 2 or 3 years that they're going to add the Gallardo's V10
into it. No, that was the surprising thing. I wrote up a post actually about the pricing, and it was revealed the European pricing that was revealed in I think it was Automotor and Sport, and the response from I'd say at least 2/3 of the commenters was just the fact that it's overpriced. For what's being offered, it's just not rational to charge anywhere between 100 and 120, 130 grand for a vehicle that they just didn't feel was across the board really worth it. Which I can kind of see. I'd like to see what's going to transpire over the next couple years and the popularity of it. And do we have any idea how many they're going to be producing a year or anything like that yet?
I don't think we do. I haven't seen any.
But no, it should be really, really interesting to see what's done to it. And then, you know, my question always is, if there's a problem with the vehicle when it comes out of the factory, the aftermarket is always bound to fix it somehow. And I'd really, really be interested to see what the aftermarket would do with that, because there isn't a huge group of people that, you know, buy their Gallardo or buy their Ferrari and start throwing parts at it. But there seems like there could be a larger market for that, and especially when you got a vehicle that might be underdeveloped. You can expect, especially a lot of the big Audi tuners, to maybe try to jump on with both feet. It's just a matter of getting a donor vehicle to actually do R&D on, and of course that's the most expensive part. So
yeah, I guess I mean personally, if I'm spending that much money for a car,
you want something out of the box,
right?
That's just ready to go.
I don't want to throw something at it to make it what it should be. It should be stellar as is. And I think in that area of really high performance cars, I mean supercars, really. You know, the Corvette sets the bar for bang for the buck, and then
right.
Above that, if you're gonna charge more and have less power, you have to bring to the table either some emotional appeal, some history that goes along with it, which I don't know. I think there's going to be kind of a whiz bang factor for the Audi R8. Because it's new, it's something Audi hasn't, you know, it's an area Audi hasn't gone into.
Right.
I don't know how long that's going to last, though. I mean, this could very easily turn out to be a 4 or 5 year run of a car that eventually goes away because they just couldn't move them all. But I don't want to jinx it.
I understand. You know what, you were mentioning earlier that we've seen so much of this stuff already kind of come across our, you know, quote unquote airwaves. And that's the thing, is I guess everything I'm looking at that I thought was kind of interesting was stuff we'd all seen, but I guess, you know, once again, you and I have talked about before that, you know, automakers get the perfect lighting and everything when they're doing their vehicles. Were there any vehicles that you were kind of surprised by that you saw, you know, you'd seen ahead of time, like the IROC concept or even like the Kia Ceed, when you finally saw it in the metal, you were kind of thrown back by it, were impressed by it?
Well, I'll tell you one that I liked. It's not offered in the U.S. The Citroen Picasso.
I thought it was just
a great vehicle in terms of packaging and utility, and kind of from that route, value. It has the very, very odd interior, which I don't think I would ever get used to, but aside from that, I thought, you know, this is a car that would have great mass appeal, or it should have great mass appeal in Europe for somebody who needs as much utility in a small package as possible. And honestly, when we were walking the streets of Paris, that's what we saw. We saw small cars, and anything larger than that was a car that could, you know, just do anything. You know, there were very few specialized vehicles. Like, we didn't see one truck, obviously. You know, hardly anything that could be considered a minivan, but we saw tons of these kind of 5-door large wagons.
Right, MPVs almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was more impressed with that. I saw the Suzuki Swift Sport in person.
Oh, yeah.
And I hadn't seen the Suzuki Swift in person before. And this is one of those cars, and I had this feeling a lot while I was there, which is just a shame and a bad business decision by somebody that it's not sold in the U.S. I mean, this is a car that, not that the Mini is out of range of a lot of people, although it is.
No, it is out of range of a lot of people.
It's a premium yeah. small car, so it definitely mm-hmm. has, you know, an extra, you know, 10 to 20% tacked onto its price tag. I mean, the Suzuki Swift would give you everything the Mini would, and maybe, you know, a little less prestige, or maybe a little less interior, you know, quality of the materials. But it would give you, you know, 10/10 of the fun. So it's just, it should be here. And considering Suzuki is so interested in breaking 100,000 sales per year in the U.S. and really...
It seems like a no-brainer,
right,
yeah.
Trying to establish itself and get out from under the wing of GM after it was sold. Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. And, oh, my God, I wish it was here. And some people asked us to go talk to some Suzuki people. And I would have if my feet didn't feel like they were broken. Yeah, because I've never walked so much in my life. So I gave up the hunt for a Suzuki exec on the last day and said, we'll ask him next show.
Sticking with the compacts for a while, two vehicles that I thought kind of stood out a little bit. I mean, they weren't really, really awesome vehicles, but the Toyota TS, I think it was, which is... That's going to probably spell out the new design language for the upcoming Corolla that's going to be here in the States. And then the C30, which you and I have talked about before.
Yes.
That was, you actually saw that in the flesh. What did you think of that?
Well, it was funny. The C30, they had like five out on the floor. And they didn't look like the production version. It looked like they had taken five duplicates of the concept version that had been shown at Detroit last year. They had really big wheels, hardly any clearance between the tires and the fenders. And, you know, I asked Eric what he thought of that, and he said they probably threw some aftermarket parts on most of them. And so they didn't really look production. I mean, we've seen a few shots of production cars completely undisguised out in the wild, and these definitely did not look like they had any like base models on display or anything like that. That being said, it looked like a great vehicle, and I'll stand by what I've said before in that it's just a super, super smart move by Volvo. I mean, it's going to cost them hardly anything. They're building it off the S40 platform, using, you know, basically the vast majority of parts from the S40. And they fashion on this really cool, different type of hatch. So they're gonna sell a lot of them. And I believe, you know, there's going to be a performance version with a turbo 5-cylinder somewhere in the neighborhood of like 220 to 240 horsepower, which is awesome. I mean, that's a perfect amount. I wouldn't want any more than that in a front wheel drive car.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that SEMA this year, in a few weeks, is going to be full of C30s, or three that we know of. But, you know, they're going to be pushing that as a you know, a car that you can heavily customize. The Toyota, I didn't actually see most of the Toyota stuff in person. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember if I even went by their display or if I gave Eric duties with Toyota. But I can tell you, you know, this is one of those things too, where, you know, we're stuck with our Corolla for another year. This Corolla they showed, which they renamed the Auris, isn't a Corolla we're gonna get. It's a smaller one based on, I think, a different platform. But for many years, Toyota has sold many versions of the Corolla all over the world. Some that had nothing to do with each other. And again, yeah, it has that kind of that kind of new face that Toyotas are having, especially in Europe, on the iGo.
Yeah, well, the Yaris kind of started that off here in the States.
Right.
It's still got that, yeah, the broader grille and the tally pulled headlights and all that. But, you know, from all the spy shots we've seen and all the speculation of the different vehicles, I think it's a pretty safe assumption that that's going to probably be the face of the next Corolla. You know, what the dimensions are going to be and all that's still, of course, remains to be seen. But like I said, the design language looks like it's going to probably carry over.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we've seen some spy photos of what the next U.S. Corolla might be. And it's been really weird because some of them have been, some of these renderings we've seen of them have been really boring. I mean, they don't have this kind of happy face, cute face that the Yaris has, or this, the Auris, this new Corolla. So I'm curious to see what we'll end up with here. I kind of hope it's something more like the Yaris and not kind of a boring looking tiny four-door sedan. I'm not a huge fan of the new Civic's design, but I appreciate it in that it's different. It's not just kind of this evolution.
Well, that was the other thing about the Corolla too, was the design we saw was much more revolutionary compared to even its European siblings. And from all accounts, when Honda released their new Civic in Europe, which was a pretty revolutionary design, the 5-door and the 3-door, that sent a lot of manufacturers back to the drawing table. I think Toyota, the foremost with them, because of the fact that they needed to do something different. They couldn't kind of stick to their laurels and be as conservative as they had been, judging by all the sales accounts so far of the new Civic. It's blowing up in Europe right now, so.
Right. Yeah, I'm actually looking at the Auris concept right now, and
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's a nice different step for Toyota, which has obviously often been accused of having boring designs, and I think they're cautiously trying to get away from that. I don't think they're going
Yeah.
crazy, but they're definitely giving us, things that we don't expect.
And what the hell was going on over at the Citroën booth with the DS, the transforming
That thing was
Totemobile?
crazy. I was on the well, I guess the poor excuse for a press center that
Okay.
they had, which is basically like a tent. I mean, it wasn't a permanent structure. Anyway, I was sitting in there, and we were actually sitting with the guys from Jalopnik, and this thing came on that because they were broadcasting the every single press conference on these flat screen TVs, and we turn
Oh.
around, and we see this kind of monument of a Citroën DS, and all of a sudden it starts coming apart and growing, and everybody instantly was like, is it going to pick up one of the other cars and chew it and then like spit fire out, and we're going to see monster trucks come in? And it was weird. I mean, it was a really cool piece of art, and I just did that all day long, where it would like expand and then come back down into the form of a regular car.
Was it actually sponsored by Citroën, or was it just some random independent company that came in?
I don't know. There was a guy sitting by it all day with a PC, and he was just controlling the whole thing with like Windows.
What a dope job.
Yeah, seriously. I think they. I would imagine they commissioned it and
Yeah.
had it set up and had this guy run it all day.
On,
But that was
as
exciting.
along with, yeah, I can imagine, along with other weird stuff, one of the first things you sent over was the PGO Speedster 2.
Yeah, I dug those. There was this hall, Hall 3, which had all of the kind of coach builders, and
Oh, nice.
yeah, so I spent a lot of time in there, and we tried to take as much from there as possible. And this company, PGO, makes the Speedster and another car, which I think
The
is
Savennis.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they basically look like little old Porsches,
Yeah, no.
but totally modern running gear, things like that. Rear engine, four cylinders, kind of small, but they're small cars anyway. And they were just gorgeous. Loved them. And
No, as a big fan of the old Spiders and only having been in the passenger seat of them before, they're really, really neat cars. And but of course, the problem, of course, is the mechanical aspect of it. And there's a couple different manufacturers that actually do custom kits for them. But I saw these, and I guess the photos didn't quite do it justice because it's a little bit too, it's kind of got more of an effeminate flair to it more than anything else. I
Well,
mean,
I mean, you take any small
not in,
convertible, and
yeah.
it's got effeminate flair. I mean,
Well, especially when you throw in the rhinestones, like one of them had,
well,
but
yeah, you cover anything in
yeah,
rhinestones, and all of a sudden it's effeminate.
it's the Liberace Porsche. But anyway,
But still, that's what gets you the play on the internet, a car
obviously.
covered in crystal. So they obviously took a page from some other cars that have been covered in crystal or gold or whatever.
But I'd really like to see one of these stateside. They're really, really neat little cars. I thought that was one of the more interesting things to come out of there, to be honest, especially since, like you've already talked about, just everything we'd pretty much seen already, with the exception of Ford, just to see a couple of these kind of odd manufacturers coming out.
I'll
Yeah,
point out
please.
another one, the Nissan Qashqai, which Nissan's kind of a small SUV,
Yeah.
kind of like the on-road version of the Xterra, would compete with the RAV4 and the
Okay.
CR-V. Very impressive in person. Probably not only from a design standpoint, because it was, I mean, there's only so much you can do with a small SUV look, but it felt extremely well built. I was very impressed. It felt like a much, much more expensive small SUV than I would have thought. One SUV I was totally disappointed with was the Mitsubishi Pajero, which would be the Montero here. It basically looked like it got a new front end, and for as old as that vehicle is...
it needs a full redesign.
Right. And I think it was pretty extensive, but for some reason they just didn't take the time and effort to make it look like it. And one thing I noticed right away, too, was they have a spare mounted on the back with this kind of, you know, plastic cover going over it to make it look nice. And and I opened the rear gate, and it swings open on a side hinge. And when I shut it, this plastic thing just rattled to all hell.
Ooh.
And, oh, my God, it sounded like I was opening and closing the rear door of a 20-year-old truck. Just a dropped ball from Mitsubishi. They could have sunk one with this, and if they had put a little effort into it. But I don't know how much effort this company, who has basically not much cash to go around, wants to put in a full size body on frame SUV right now.
But they still have to be making something desirable. So, the Dodge Avenger. What'd you think?
Awesome, great, better,
awesome,
better,
wow.
Better in person than in pictures.
Cool.
And I think we went around the whole team and talked about the Avenger, and Eric made the comment that he could see the Charger going to a more Avenger-like design when it gets redesigned, because obviously it's going to be really hard to redesign the Charger. The Avenger kind of takes that very upright grille of the Charger and sweeps it back a little, makes it more sporty. Mm-hmm. So it looks a little bit more athletic than the Charger, whereas the Charger looks like a linebacker,
Right.
It was very good looking in person. It is a concept, though, and whenever I see a concept that's very close to production, it's got the kind of RT trim with the front chin spoiler and the rear spoiler, and it's got the big wheels.
Right.
You always got to imagine in your head, what is this going to look like as a base vehicle? What's it going to look like with the plastic wheel covers?
Mm-hmm.
And what's it going to look like without those front fog lights? And what's, and looking at this, you really got to get the rental picture in your head, because, the majority of these vehicles aren't going to be optioned up like this.
Just like the Charger and the Magnum and all that. When we first saw the Charger concept, it was a really, really sweet vehicle. And you see it on the road now, and, yeah, it looks like something you could get at Hertz relatively easily.
Right.
So
it'll be up to everyone's own judgment as to what the Avenger might look like when they actually get one in their driveway that, doesn't have 19-inch wheels. But I the one that appeared at the show was pretty cool. I think that is going to be a big chunk of Dodge's, passenger car lineup. But
yeah,
that segment, it isn't going to have enough legs to carry them. They need their small car, and they need it fast. They need to find a partner to build to give them
the
a small
Hornet already.
Car. Yeah, and they need to do it awfully, awfully fast. Another car I'll point out too that is a huge car in Europe, the Renault Twingo, which is...
Oh, yeah, I really like that hatch, yeah.
Yeah, the Twingo was introduced, I don't know the exact year, but many years ago, like somewhere around 8 years ago maybe, I don't know. And it literally hasn't changed since the day it came out, and it made a big splash when it came out. I actually remember it when it first came out, and we saw them all over Paris. So this was... They showed a Renault Twingo concept, which is really the first time they've kind of shown that they're going to do something with this and give it a modern update. It was a small 3-door hatch, same as the production Twingo, and it looked really attractive. It's a concept that had huge chiseled fender flares, but the basic design was really good. Small 3-door hatch. With a vertical back, so that was cool. Walking.
We want more hatch over here, obviously.
I do. I've bought into the smallest good thing, and I want to see more small cars. But now it's just a question of of these manufacturers who missed the boat, didn't read the tea leaves correctly, how fast they can get small cards here, and, you know, if they do it too fast, are they going to compromise on the quality of the car they bring here?
Right.
Which I think Dodge and or Chrysler and Ford are definitely in that position, whereas I think GM is more is ready to literally just take small cars from Opel and bring them over here and badge them as Saturns.
They've got the resources, but yeah, no, the Twingo. I mean, first of all, the greenhouse on that. I'm not sure if you're looking at the photo right now, but it's huge. Mm-hmm. And then it seems to have like the B pillarless doors, which is really really cool, and those big blistered fenders too. So I thought that was one of the ones that stood out to me in the first day or so, that I really thought was a really really neat vehicle and neat concept, and you know it looks in concept form, like it wouldn't take much to transfer over to production with the exception of a few tweaks here and there. But it's such a big seller over there that I really hope they pull it off well.
You know what? We would be remiss if we didn't bring up Ford and the Mondeo, because
we covered it so much, and we're just skipping right by it.
Right. I mean, right before the show, actually right before our last podcast, didn't we talk about the sedan?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. So I got to see the wagon in person, and it was funny. You know, you mentioned in the podcast last time about how the wagon had all these concept cues and it wasn't a production version. And I didn't remember that or see that when we were talking on the podcast, but seeing it on the platform, I mean, it was clear you were looking at a concept, and it was clear, and it made it even more clear that the pictures of the sedan we saw were probably very close to production. Because the wagon did look very kind of concept-y, but
just that front air dam in and of itself is so radical as is. So
those giant intakes, but obviously, it seems like the only thing Ford is really taking from the awesome Iosis concept from Frankfurt are these headlights. You know, basically any Ford product where you've got this shape of headlight, if you put it on something else, it's Iosis inspired, and that's basically what I think of this Iosis X concept that they had.
Right.
It was just, you know, a small unibody SUV like everyone we've seen before, and it had Iosis headlights. So,
moving on.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed with that at all, which is sad because it was one of the few surprises at the show. I was, you know, hoping the surprises would actually be really great, and they really weren't that great. But the Mondeo wagon looked awesome. Can't wait to see, you know, the actual production version of those. And then we can complain even more about how we won't get them here.
We'll get it over here, exactly. Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and I think you and I have talked before about when the Boxster underwent its last redesign, and how it was a very, very kind of subtle evolution, which is, you know, kind of par for the course with Porsche. Mm-hmm. You saw the new Mini Coopers there, too. Anything you thought was kind of glaring about them that you thought there was a good change, a bad change, if it was totally indistinguishable from the other ones, anything?
Well, I mean, yeah, from, you know, 50 yards away, indistinguishable from the last generation Minis. But you get closer and they are demonstrably bigger.
Okay.
Now, they aren't necessarily heavier than the old versions because they're not. As a matter of fact, I think they're lighter. We didn't obviously drive them at the show, but I've already read reports that the Mini has actually lost a little bit of its kind of go-kart character that made it such a hit and really got a lot of its kind of fans to forgive its shortcomings was because it was so fun to drive. And I've read a few reports already that say it's lost that kind of fun factor.
That's really disappointing because you'd assume, number one, with the turbocharged engine, which, I mean, thank God they got rid of the previous supercharged two valves per cylinder engine, and with lighter weight, which was always one of my biggest problems with the Mini, was it was such a porker for a car that small. That's really, really disappointing. Wow. It should be interesting. I'm really looking forward to us making a play to get one in the Autoblog garage if when they start doling out the press vehicles.
Oh, yeah, we'll get
but,
one.
Cool, great.
The other thing that was weird about the Mini is Chris Paukert, who's now at Winding Road, asked them about the iDrive controller showing up in the Mini,
because
yeah. motoringfile.com had, which is a Mini site, had reported that it basically was, and it wasn't going to be a dial like the iDrive. It was going to be
a
joystick.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so the Mini people, or the BMW people, whoever Chris asked, said, you know, no, it's not going to get the iDrive. But I was reading Motoring File today, and they acknowledged what Mini had told Winding Road, and Motoring File still questioned, well, it's the same software that's in iDrive, except it has a joystick to control it, and it doesn't control one of the functions, like the climate control, but it does, you know, navigation, entertainment, and communication.
Cell phone, yeah, right.
And so it's missing one of the features out of four. It's the same software, you know, similar user interface, and it has a joystick. I mean, how is that not the iDrive, except it's a different interface?
With a different interface,
right,
yeah.
Right, right. So, basically, in my mind at least, the Mini's going to have the iDrive, regardless of what they say. I mean, they're just playing semantics. Just because they don't call it the iDrive doesn't mean that they're not using, you know, the vast majority of components that make up the iDrive. Now, I again, and some commenters made a really good point that it's just fashionable to dig the iDrive, you know.
Yes, you know, you and I have talked about that before, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons they'd prefer to distance themselves from that interface in the first place.
Right, right. And I agree. I think it has become fashionable just to dig into it. I think with these luxury cars that pack so much technology into them, all of them are going to be difficult to learn.
Right.
There is no, well, at least none of them have found a simple interface to access and control all of these.
But they're also providing with, you know, three owner's manuals that are 6 inches thick. So, I mean, you know, that's, the features outweigh the ease of handling, unfortunately.
If you ask any owner, they will tell you, yes, there was a learning curve, but after a week I got it and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I think it's just people who, you know, are paying, again, $80,000 expect, you know, the car to basically do everything for them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to that level of technology, that's just not going to happen. You got to put a little effort in to learn it.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up Paris. I mean,
yeah, I have to say,
were you just wholly underwhelmed, or do you think it was a complete waste, or do you think it was mildly, you know, worth your time, or what?
It wasn't a waste. I mean, in terms of Autoblog, and you know, I always want to do coverage of events as good as we can, and I think we learned a lot
definitely.
At the show of mm-hmm. you know what to do next time. But I mean, international shows are such a different bag compared to domestic shows in the United States. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
I used to think like, oh, it's going to be so hard to do the Chicago show, and you compare it to going to Frankfurt or Paris, and going to any show in the U.S. is just a cakewalk. Because, you know, being a foreigner in a strange land, it's just, you know, 10 times more difficult.
Yeah, I believe it.
And oh my God, the hotel we were at, which wasn't a bad hotel per se, it's just, again, I, for the life of me, no matter how much I confirm there's Wi-Fi in a hotel, it never works. It just doesn't. It doesn't matter what I do. I mean, I walked around this hotel with my laptop in my hand, looking for where the signal would be strong enough where I could upload something. And I walked around for like a half hour, sitting down like a crazy man in front of people's doors, and I just couldn't make it work. And that just happens everywhere. It just makes it worse when you're, you know, in a foreign country and you're not, you know, in the U.S.
Not, where don't
you
have the native tongue and all that,
options. Yeah. It was frustrating. It was hard. We got a lot of volume out, but I think there's a lot of improvements we could still do. So, I'm looking forward to the next show, which is SEMA in not that long.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we had really good SEMA coverage last year. So we'll take what we learn and apply it to SEMA and see if we can do it better and make it a little easier on ourselves at the same time. So,
couple pieces of information or couple worthy things of note to come out of the Chevy front since you've left, or the GM front, was the next Chevy Impala, the drawing that came up a couple days ago.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that while we were away, and that got Eric Bryan into quite a little tizzy, since he's our big Impala guy. Although I have to say, he had already seen the pictures a long time ago and was like bound to secrecy, so it really didn't surprise him. He had heard from some inside sources of what it was going to look like. And if I'm not mistaken, it looks like a four-door Camaro. I mean,
it is a four-door Camaro. Yeah, it is a four-door Camaro, even all the way down to the. I mean, if you look at the drawing, it even just looks like they just kind of penciled in the rear door, and that was about it. Yeah, and it was, you know, everybody was making kind of a big deal out of it. And I'm looking at it going, I'm really not that impressed with it, unfortunately. We'll hope. I just hope the next Impala is rear-wheel drive. That's all. That's the only thing that I really wish for the next Impala is to make sure it's powering the right wheels.
I think it's in everyone's eyes. It's pretty much confirmed. It's going to be rear-wheel drive. I mean, GM already announced that the Holden Commodore will be coming over to the U.S. He said at the Chicago show early next year, we're going to see a Pontiac-badged Holden Commodore, which pretty Thank much God. Says to me, if they're going to use it, they're not going to make kind of the same mistake they made with the GTO. If they're going to use one of the Australian platforms, they're going to spread it across the line and make it as viable cost-wise as they can. And of course, that platform is probably going to underpin the Camaro, so why not stretch it a few inches, throw in a couple doors, make it a four-door. With the Camaro, though, we have only seen it in concept form. And again, I hold that, you know, to be production,
base V6 model going to be?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I just see so many things that have to be lost in order for it to be production. I mean, you look at those bumpers and you ask yourself, how is that going to withstand, you know, a 5 mile per hour bumper test? And shrink down the wheels by 2.5 inches and do all that in your head and then ask yourself, what's it going to look like? And so I'm still waiting until we actually get a glimpse of what the production version might look like. It'll be great if we see it in January at the Detroit show. I don't know if that's too early, but...
Possibly. But no, you bring up a good point, because one of the posts which you already mentioned was the fact that we are going to be getting the Holden Commodore, which, you know, there's been a lot of us that have been kind of pining away for that. And, you know, the only version I think I've ever seen is their SSV version, which is, you know, the body kitted, you know, 17, 18 inch wheels, spoiler on the back, and this really, really good looking vehicle. I haven't really seen a lot of base Commodores, so that could be wholly disappointing when I'm able to walk into a National Rent-A-Car and get one and just not be very overwhelmed.
I'll tell you, while I think it's super, super smart for GM to make this decision to bring in their Australian cars. I mean, look, GM is doing what we've been yelling at Ford to do. GM is bringing over cars from Europe. GM is bringing over cars from Australia. And here we are, you know, sitting with Ford saying, my God, just do it. You have great product everywhere else in the world. Bring it here. So total applause for GM for doing that. However, if at the Chicago show we are staring at a Holden Commodore with a twin kidney grill with a Pontiac badge in the middle, and that's all, then it's going to be like, okay,
this is not how you're supposed to do it.
You kind of got it, but you didn't get it.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, for all the flack the GTO got, the GTO is an awesome car. You know, that's a fact. It was screwed from the beginning.
Yes.
Because of its design. It was a boring car. It was the fastest way to get it over here, you know, switch the grill.
Exactly.
But it was a great car. It had an interior that was better than any Cadillacs. It had ungodly amounts of power for the price. But it looked like, it looked like a Cobalt coupe, you know? I mean,
stretched and squished,
yeah,
definitely.
Exactly.
No, and that was the thing, is I remember when we first started hearing the word it was going to come over, however long ago it was, now 5, 6, 7 years, and a lot of my friends getting really, really excited, oh, it's going to be really, really badass, we're looking forward to this, and then it came over here, and we finally saw it, and we're like, okay, well, the engine's cool, and yeah, the interior was really nice, but looked at the design and went... Yeah. I'm not sure if I really want to drive something like that. And like I said, getting back to the Commodore, same thing. I think it's a really, really good vehicle or a really, really attractive vehicle when it's spec'd out. But in base form, I'm having a hard time really getting too enthused about it. So.
Well, and I mean, basically, GM has to invest in the product a little bit more than it's used to. It's gotten away for 20 years with the minimal amount of investment to bring something over, to make something happen, and you just have to, you know, take a page out of Volkswagen Audi when they share platforms. You know, this is a car for a new market and give it a new design, let it differentiate itself. I mean, the funny thing is that I'm sure bean counters at GM are saying, well, you know, nobody in the U.S. is aware of the Holden Commodore in Australia. You know, none of your average car buyers. And, well, you know what? The average car buyers come to people like us to ask about cars. And when they say, what do you think about the new Pontiac Bonneville, the three-wheel drive or whatever, and we say, you know, it's a rebadged car from another country, they threw a new grill on it. You know, people walk into the showroom with that in their head. They walk in the showroom thinking that, you know, this is just a rebadged version of something else, and they take that with them. They've got to give these cars a distinct flavor, and I think they're going to do it. Time will tell. It's their decision. But
well, I really think the Australian-ness of the Holden lineup could transfer very well over. The translation between Australia and the U.S. could be a really, really smooth transition for them, because I think we both kind of, both countries kind of share a certain, I don't know, we like the flair of a big beefy sedan with rear-wheel drive and a big engine under the hood and a little bit of luxury and plushness. Yeah.
Chrysler proved that beyond a shadow of a doubt with 300C.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my God, it's been how many years since that car came out, and none of its competitors has been able to step up with an answer to that.
Right.
You know, again, I'll go back to a point Eric made to me, we were talking about on the flight to France, was that the 300C was a great solution, a great alternative for people stepping down from body-on-frame SUVs who were used to big, rugged machines. And those people would rather get into a big rear-wheel drive sedan than to get into a CUV that they basically see as, you know, a wussy car or a wussy vehicle. They would much rather get into a honking rear-wheel drive V8 sedan, and Chrysler was the only one offering it, so they reaped the benefits for a long time. Now we see that kind of bubble bursting a little bit, but you know, I think it could easily come back if we get, you know, the rear-wheel drive Impala, get something rear-wheel drive from Ford in a Ford or sedan besides the Crown Vic, which I'm completely convinced, I think I said this last time, that it will be built forever.
We've talked about that a couple episodes ago, as a matter of fact. Yeah,
it will be built forever. So I guess, you know, I kind of see the Paris show as the kickoff for the auto show season, and it was kind of a weak kickoff, a little disappointing, a little frustrating.
Yeah,
but it's just the beginning. I think every show from here is a lot more promising. Especially the LA show. There's going to be a lot of world debuts at the LA show. Let's hope they just keep them under their hat. Let us all be surprised. And that's going to be a great show. This will be the first year of the LA shows in November. So,
and I will be there.
Yes, you will. You know, I think I'm going to go too. I wasn't going to.
Oh, excellent. Great.
But I think I'm going to too. So hopefully we'll have a really big team there. And consistent Wi-Fi and hopefully all those other little things that always go wrong will go right this time, but
keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've talked Paris to death, so we are going to close this podcast in a minute, but before we do, I want to give Volvo, our sponsors, a chance to say a few more words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and before we let everyone go, just want everyone to know that if you're listening for the first time, you can subscribe to the Autoblog podcast in the iTunes podcast directory. Just do a search for Autoblog, and you should find us. And of course, on autoblog.com, we have posts going up every day, giving you all the car news, all the automotive news in the industry that's happening, when it's happening. So make sure to check autoblog.com as often as you can throughout the day. And for times when you're not in front of your computer, we have just kind of unveiled our mobile site. You can go to www.autoblog.com on your phone, and we will detect that you are accessing us from a cell phone and not a computer, and give you the special mobile version so it's not all graphically intense. And so far people have loved it, so if I was wealthy enough to have a phone that could do that, I would partake as well, but I don't. So everyone.
I'll just say it works really, really well on the Blackberries.
Does so it? Oh. It?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's very, very clean, definitely.
Good to know.
And also, rewrite of the day, rewrite of the week. If you haven't already submitted your car to our rewrite of the day group on Flickr, make it a point to do so. And of course, per usual, we're picking one out a day, and then we're putting up all five for the week on Sunday for all our readers to choose what their favorite rewrite of the week is. So
yes,
get on there, get your video, get your picks uploaded. Once again, 450 pixels wide, and maybe you'll get chosen.
Yes, and include as much information about your vehicle as possible. It helps.
Please. Yes.
And with that, I think we're going to let everybody go, and we will talk to you all next week.
Have a good one.